Amazon's dynamic pricing feels a lot like price gouging. Spotify might be punishing artists who go to Apple Music first. Facebook AI, Instagram scams, and robotic fish killers. All that and a whole lot more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1586, recorded Friday, August 26th, 2016. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Igloo Software. Igloo is an intranet you'll actually like. It connects people with the information they need to do their best work. Try it for free at igloosoftware.com/twit or sign up for a live demo to see it in action. And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you fresh, high-quality ingredients to cook delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/TNT.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the techiest tech news you'll ever see.
Yep, we put the tech in tech news.
We do. I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. Welcome back.
Thank you. I was gone a whole day.
Was it a staycation?
It was a staycation. Yep. I washed the car. I folded laundry.
Man, you know how to do it right.
It was awesome. I also worked a little bit on iOS today, the other show I host. You know, yeah. I never can find time to really dig into the iOS, so I did that.
I hear you. Mm-hmm. I hear you. Well, it's good to have you back.
Thanks. Should we get to some news?
Yep.
If you are buying stuff on Amazon, you might want to make sure they're not gouging you. The New York Times and CNET are both reporting inconsistencies in Amazon pricing that might be bugs in the software, or they might be features for Amazon's bottom line. The first complaint is with Amazon Subscribe and Save. That's a service that's been around since 2007 and has become less and less about saving in the past decade. Customers report that the price for subscriptions fluctuates wildly and discounts are not always what they seem. CNET also looked into Amazon Fresh pricing and found a possible bug in that software. Now, a membership to Amazon Fresh costs $300 a year. It lets customers in a few big cities order fresh fruit, ice cream, and other foods. The service offered a buy it again feature, which would imply that the price would be somewhat the same as it was the first time you bought it. Not so. Some products were as much as five times the price, so customers were given the opportunity to buy an 89-cent Snickers bar for $4.95. Apparently, products on Amazon Fresh have the same product identification numbers as those on Amazon.com, but not necessarily the same price. So Amazon did not comment. They declined to comment to the New York Times and CNET. They use a dynamic pricing system, which anyone who's ever bought things on Amazon understands that, like, sometimes things are, like, priced crazily. And I get it. Like, I've definitely seen things like a Snickers bar on Amazon for $4.95, and you think, like, why would you ever buy one Snickers bar? Of course it would cost $4.95. But then Amazon Fresh is this service that you're paying $300 a year to be part of, and so that you get to have these low prices. And that's not really right.
I mean, like, I was poking around a little bit to try and find other examples, or just more also to kind of look into this specific example of the Snickers bar, the $4.95 Snickers bar versus the 89 cents that they paid initially. And I mean, the main difference that I saw is that the $4.95 Snickers bar was sold by Smile and Save. So a company that's selling through and distributed through Amazon Fresh. The 89-cent one, it was sold by Amazon directly. So there's some sort of confusion there, and that seems to be a part of what this is. Is that by design, or is that a mistake in the system? I also know that Amazon, just as a marketplace, can be very confusing. Not, you know, taking Amazon Fresh out of the equation, but when I go to Amazon and I search for a product, I understand that there's dynamic pricing, but sometimes you have an item up there and it's priced a certain way and it's very different from what you read in the descriptions. The descriptions obviously match the item, but they don't necessarily match the listing that you're actually seeing. And then if you really look into it closer, you see that there is something that more matches what's in the comments on the sidebar and like these other sellers, and maybe Amazon is listed there, but the one you're actually looking at is this store. And I think the stores can just kind of set their prices the way they do, but why is Amazon resurfacing this product that you bought from a different place, a different store at, you know, five times the price? I don't know. It sounds like a mistake to me, but maybe it's by design.
Well, no, I think it is a software bug, but they haven't fixed it yet, and they right. haven't commented on these stories yet either. Last week, a few weeks ago, we talked about Postmates. There was a story on Quartz about how their prices were often wrong, and you would order something and get charged two or three times as much, and that maybe that was part of how they were making money. And then we talked to a Postmates employee, emailed us and said, you know, that, that their pricing is unclear, even to them, even to people who drive for them. Postmates today followed up, did a kind of angry post on Medium saying, you know, there were a lot of inconsistencies, but there really weren't. I mean, you know, it's
the inconsistencies is the price. Very inconsistent.
There were incorrect things written in the article, which is, they didn't have any proof that what was written in the article wasn't right. So, yeah, I mean, we're dealing with technology and we're dealing with like the dynamic pricing system, and it's up and down. And Uber is the same way. They've gotten in trouble for that. You have all this technology that says like you can figure out exactly what the demand is going to be by the time of day and the versus the supply, and come up with this price. It's going to be sometimes crazy. So,
especially when Fresh as a service that you're paying for is $299 per year. Yes. So it's pretty costly to just get in the door for that particular service, not to mention and paying four or five times the amount that you should pay for a Snickers bar. I got to the point after looking at the Snickers bar, by the way, have you ever done this where you look at like logos and a wall of logos so much that you detach your normal thought about that being a Snickers bar and suddenly it looks completely foreign? It was like I stared at Snickers bars for 10 minutes on this article, and by the end I didn't actually think that Snickers bars existed anymore. I thought they were fake. People familiar with the matter, that elusive bunch of inside information leakers to press outlets like Bloomberg, are saying that Spotify, the number one music streaming service right now, has been retaliating against artists who give exclusives to competitors like Apple Music and Tidal. Sources say that Spotify has notified artists that their songs wouldn't be represented on featured playlists once those exclusives find their way to Spotify's library. As well, sources are also saying that Spotify has been actively burying the music of those artists in search results. Now, Spotify has told Recode that the search ranking allegations printed by Bloomberg were, quote, unequivocally false. However, they wouldn't comment on the featured playlist allegations here. Bigger artists, obviously, they're probably not going to care a whole lot. They're going to get a lot of money from these exclusive deals, and maybe that's going to outweigh, you know, the money that they would make if they just released without that extra added layer of hype all over the map. But smaller artists, yeah, this could be a big deal. And there were even reports of, you know, some more smaller artists having an opportunity to debut their music on Beats One, on Beats One Radio, and then being basically informed in so many words that if they do that, that could actually affect their promotion on Spotify as a result.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Streaming services are really just throwing a wrench in everything. Like, people don't really know what's going on. I think one of the biggest, Frank Ocean was one of the biggest exclusives in the past week on Apple Music, and you could stream it. And he was part of Def Jam Records, which is part of Universal. But then this album came out, he was not part of those. He was no longer part of Universal. Mm-hmm. So it's confusing because he was someone that became famous by being part of a big record company. And then he was like, I don't need this. And I have an exclusive on Apple Music. So, you know, Universal Group is saying they want to stop exclusives. But, I mean, if Apple's going to pay the artists then they don't have much say in that, really.
Yeah, and another thing that I was trying to kind of figure out, so if so let's say Apple Music gives Frank Ocean an exclusive, and then Spotify, based on these sources, actually retaliates by saying, well, then we're going to take his other music and we're going to bury it in search results. If you're Spotify, why on earth would you do that?
Yeah.
It basically makes it seem like Apple has even more of an exclusive on that artist, like Surface. So I don't know why Spotify would actively hurt its own library. I mean, because I don't know what the benefit is from that to Spotify. Maybe intimidation. I suppose that would be the tactic if this is indeed happening. But that just seems to hurt Spotify's image, you know, to not have any of their music kind of showing up in search results as easily as maybe it would otherwise. That seems wrong.
Absolutely. And I mean, Apple and Spotify have been kind of at each other. Spotify's been complaining that, you know, you can't sign, Apple will charge extra if you sign up for the Spotify app through iTunes, if you buy it in the, you know, the Apple store. And, you know, they just sort of brought that up and said, like, oh, Apple's, you know, individually like punishing us, but it's like that's just the policy of the Apple store.
Right.
But I mean, in a way, Apple really has an advantage because they can do whatever the artists want. So like Beyonce and Adele said, we just want you to sell our album for the first week. We don't want it to be on streaming. And Apple said, okay, we won't stream
right.
it. We'll just let you sell it.
Like
where
that.
Spotify doesn't have that option. They can't say, you know, they can't say, okay, well, we'll just sell the album because they don't sell albums. All they have is streaming. So all they have is like someone saying, yes, I want to exclusively release on Spotify. So I don't know. This doesn't, I think Spotify seems threatened by this. Like, I believe that they said this, or like some people said this, and then they said, oh, no, we didn't say that.
So, yeah, for sure threatened, because Apple has enough of a war chest to basically lose money on Apple Music, and it doesn't really matter a whole lot, you know. It just drives up the their service in comparison with Spotify, which is basically losing, you know, the streaming music industry is not a huge money making venture right now, and Spotify really has, you know, though it has a lot of users, has a lot to make, you know, money-wise, in order to kind of make up for that. And I mean, what Spotify does have, they've tried for exclusives, apparently, but what they refuse to do is allow the potential exclusives to only release on the paid tier, because they think that their free service is such a huge foot through the door for people. Get in with the free service, then convert them into the paid tier. Anyone that wants to do an exclusive is like, well, why don't we limit this to the paid tier so we maximize, you know, value and all that sort of stuff. And Spotify, you know, is so kind of tied to its free tier that it's not willing to do that.
Well, Sprint launched a new $80 a month unlimited freedom premium plan that offers you unlimited-ish data. It's $20 more than a month than the unlimited freedom plan that is hardly unlimited at all. Here's what you get with unlimited freedom premium, according to The Verge. Unlimited streaming at 1080p, a bump in music quality streaming, but you'll still be throttled when you stream music and games. Now, this is clearly an attempt to provide a plan comparable to T-Mobile, which offers unlimited calling, texting, and data for $70 a month, which also includes throttling. T-Mobile at least gets props for only offering one plan, which makes things a little less confusing.
A little bit. I mean, it's one plan, but it has a ton of add-on options.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, in order to get the HD streaming, that's an additional $25 on top of, I think, the $70 intro. So you're still paying $95 for just HD streaming. And then if you want anything else beyond that, it's all those extras. So no matter what, I mean, either way that you approach it between the two, it's just confusing, man. I guess you just have to know going into it exactly what you want. Do you really need 4K video on your mobile device? Personally, like, I don't feel like I ever really need to watch 4K video content on my mobile device.
Right,
it seems like a waste.
Using data, you know,
yeah.
Like maybe you would do it on Wi-Fi, but like, I don't.
But I guess when it comes down to it, it's the whole principal aspect, which is, you know, it used to be that data was dumb, basically. It used to be that you paid for data and you did what you want with that data. And now we're kind of seeing these plans really work out to the point to where they say, you're going to pay this, and it's not necessarily inexpensive. You're going to pay this, and we'll give you access to all this data, but we want to know how you're using that data. And if you plan on using it that way, then you have to pay more for it. And that's where it gets confusing for customers and for consumers.
And if you add in you're renting or you're leasing a phone or three phones,
yeah,
you know, and then it's just like, that's another $15 a month for the rest of your life. It is very confusing.
Yeah. In related T-Mobile news, though, we should talk about this.
We definitely should talk about this related T-Mobile news. A field engineer posted a photo on Twitter. If you're watching now, you can see the photo. It is a big old pile of live snakes. Jason doesn't like snakes. It's 125 feet up on a cell phone tower. They did not give the location of the tower. So if you are near a cell phone tower, now you have something else to worry about.
Watch out. Those snakes might be dropping on your head as you walk by those cell phone towers.
I feel a little less scared because you can't.
Get them off me. Get them off me.
You have T-Mobile on your phone and you can't.
Am I worried?
And you don't get, we don't get access in here, so we're safe from the snakes.
Yeah.
That's the upside is of that, not being able to make phone calls.
Is that how it works when you have T-Mobile? Then yeah. You might get attacked by snakes.
I guess so.
See, that's part of it. That should be part of their marketing, or at least counter marketing.
Unlimited-ish data, but snakes.
But snakes. You know, but if you like snakes, it's okay. It's okay. You're going to like T-Mobile if you like snakes. Facebook faced a lot of heat a while back when Gizmodo published a scathing look at its trends, primarily accusing Facebook staff of suppressing conservative topics. Facebook investigation at the time actually found no evidence of that manipulation, but the company still vowed to address those concerns and even met with a dozen leading conservatives at its headquarters to kind of help put minds at ease and discuss the options. We talked about all that before. Today, Facebook announced the next phase of trending topics, and it involves removing humans from the process entirely. As such, descriptions written by humans before would now be removed going forward. And the company says this allows the service to scale more effectively. So, for example, for audio listeners, a trending topic on Mars would have once included a blurb like NASA rover captures 360-degree view of Mars. Now it would simply say Mars along with how many people are talking about it, you know, 4,500 or whatever that number is. So basically offering less context around topics. And that kind of in turn requires more interaction from the user to kind of find out more.
So now, are humans still picking the topics? I thought they were like algorithmically given to them, but then there was still a human doing some choosing.
There's a little bit of human interaction at the end to make sure that what's selected is actually considered newsable, you know, news and not just like somebody's lunch. You know what I mean? Like if the computer really went rogue and popped up a picture of meatloaf, that human is there to go, that's not news. Yeah. Maybe it's really good meatloaf. Maybe it is news. I don't know.
Yeah.
So there's still that line. Is meatloaf news?
Some days it is. I mean, I'm sure there's meatloaf news out there. Of course, there's the meatloaf, the singer also.
That's true.
Could be making news any day. I never look at the trending topics. And I looked at it today and it was just a bunch of really depressing stuff. That,
yeah,
like, I
never
wish
really
I had
pay attention
seen.
To it. Oh, yeah. So, well, that sounds like news. I
mean, yeah.
That's the way of the world these days.
Exactly. I mean, maybe people wish they hadn't seen those snakes.
Yeah, I kind of do. It kind of made the hair on my arms stand up. And, you know, humans are expensive. But I don't know if Facebook has to worry about that too much.
Yeah.
But that, I suppose that's more rationale. It slows down the process, all that kind of stuff. So. And one of the other kind of benefits to this is that they can actually offer it in more languages. So there's that too.
Yeah, humans are also, they have opinions, mm-hmm. ideas, biases, all those nasty things that algorithms don't have.
Some humans would maybe say that meatloaf is not news, and then they wouldn't put it there. And then if meatloaf is news, so many other people would not know that it was news, and they'd just continue on throughout the course of their day not having known the meatloaf news.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say meatloaf is not news and move on to the next story, okay? The Nikkei reports that the iPhone 7 might be in short supply at launch. We probably heard this before every year. Provided there is demand for the iPhone 7, then you might not get it. But I'm kidding a little bit. But the industry experts do say that demand is going to be lower for this iPhone. But those willing to suffer through the loss of a headphone jack might have to wait for one due to faulty components. An industry source told Nikkei that some suppliers are still trying to fix low yield rates of their components. They added that at launch, there will be an estimated 10 million fewer iPhone 7s than there were iPhone 6s last year, or 6s's last year. 6s's. Mm. Last year.
Successes.
Rumors are that you can pre-order your headphone jackless phone, which is what I'm calling it. That's not the official name. on 9/9 for 9/6. That's September 16th or September 23rd delivery. This will be interesting because, you know, we've talked about this a bunch of times. Apple's had a revenue drop for two straight quarters. What's going to happen next? But, you know, people, when they hear that things are in short supply, they want them more.
And so. I think that's exactly what this is. This literally happens every year.
Yeah.
Every year, the new iOS device has some sort of shortage, and you hear about it well before it's ever announced. And at this point, I'm just kind of convinced it's part of their marketing ploy. It's part of their marketing plan. It's built in because it does a great job. It gets people talking about it. Not to say that there aren't shortages, but I think a company of Apple's scale knows how to maneuver those waters probably and knows to expect them. But this gets people talking about it for sure.
Absolutely.
And I also wonder, along with the shortages, now we have the Apple upgrade program. So I wonder if they get first priority because they're part of the upgrade program or...
The iPhone every year
program. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Where that kind of factors in.
We'll see.
Yep.
After the break, Facebook has just taken a step to make computer vision as good as human vision. Nicole Lee from Engadget is here to discuss. But first, let's take a minute to thank Igloo, the sponsor of this episode. People use dozens of different cloud services to get their work done every day. Whether you're using Salesforce, Zendesk, or Google Drive, it's harder than ever to keep track of everything. But now you can easily bring your cloud-based apps together in a modern intranet with Igloo integrations. Igloo is an intranet you'll actually like. It's a cloud platform that helps you share files, collaborate on documents, blog updates, coordinate calendars, and manage all your projects. Unlike other solutions, you can customize Igloo to fit your needs and work with your current IT investments like Office 365, Salesforce, SharePoint, Active Directory, file sharing solutions like Google Drive and Dropbox, and support systems like Zendesk. Igloo also offers a variety of access, authentication, and identity services to ensure that only authorized users have access in private clouds over SSL and with 256-bit encryption. It's used by large enterprises and growing companies like User Testing, BDO, American Family Insurance, and ATP World Tour. You can try it free at igloosoftware.com/twit or sign up for a live demo to see it in action. When you sign up through our link, you can get your own Igloo for up to 10 people, and it's absolutely free for as long as you want it. Just go to igloosoftware.com/TWIT.
All right, Facebook is open sourcing some code designed to get the public involved in helping to develop its computer vision technology. Joining us to discuss this effort is Nicole Lee from Engadget. How's it going, Nicole?
Hey, how is everyone?
Doing awesome. It's great to see your face and hear your voice. So tell us a little bit about this. First, this project is aimed at a big challenge when it comes to analyzing images, and basically that's creating context around everything inside an image and not just a man or a dog. Why is this important to Facebook?
So Facebook is more frequently than ever is about having visual content, you know, photos and videos, like almost the entirety of your newsfeed these days is something that's very visually rich, whether it's photos or videos or GIFs or whatever it is. So I think it's really important for Facebook to enhance computer vision. There are several different use cases for this. Very recently, they have made something called automatic alt text, which means that the captioning of photos is automatic. That means if you're a blind user who can't really see, who can't, you know, see photos, obviously, you can use something called iOS screen reader, which is a specific software to basically scan what is on a page. So with automatic alt text, even without specific tags in the photo, you can know what's in it. So the photo will say person, dog. So at least the blind user knows it's a person, it's a photo of a person and a dog, right? Which, and this is, that sounds really simple, but for people with low vision or a blind person, like, that is something that is very valuable information. But that's just scratching the surface, because a photo is more than just a person and a dog. It could be what's the person doing with the dog? Is he throwing a ball? Is the person tall? Is the dog tiny? Like, there's so many different variables. Like, are they in a field? Is it a house? Like, there's so many different variables that it's just scratching the surface of what a machine can see.
What is the benefit to Facebook in kind of releasing this code to the community in the way that they're doing on GitHub?
I think because it's such a complicated thing, you know, computer vision is so complicated. Like I say, again, doing all of these things, it's such a complicated task that the more people that are able to help fix the problem, the better it is, the faster it's able to sort of improve itself by having the community help in and pitch in and solve any problems that are involved.
So tell us about it's three blocks of code, and they each have their own kind of specific application. Tell us about those, kind of what they do exactly.
Sure. It's a little technical, but basically it's something called Deep Mask, Sharp Mask, and MultiPathNet. And all three combined work into a visual recognition system that tries to discern what's on an image at the pixel level. So what Deep Mask and Sharp Mask do is that they go in, okay, there are three different things in this picture. I don't know what they are, but there's three things. And they'll sort of outline them in the image. And then MultiPathNet, we're like, okay, based on the community feedback, based on all the algorithm and the millions and millions of examples that we have, we can figure out this is kind of the shape of a dog. This is kind of the shape of a person. And they'll sort of label those segments individually. Now, eventually, Facebook wants this computer vision to be smart enough so that you can actually physically take them and then move them around the image. You can eventually use this computer vision technology for augmented reality applications. So, for example, you can sort of imagine Pokemon Go is an example that they came up with. Imagine a Pokemon Go character hiding behind a table or hiding behind a chair, and it'll make it a lot more interactive. And I think for Facebook anyway, it'll make being able to identify objects that much easier. So for example, with Google Photos, you can just sort of Google ice cream, and it'll sort of come up with all these photos of ice cream, even though you've never tagged those photos ice cream. It just knows it's a photo of an ice cream. So it'll make searching photos easier. It'll make identifying photos easier. It'll make, you know, low vision accessibility easier. And I think the implications are there for even video as well.
So will we be able to tell how many calories are in that ice cream by taking a photo of it?
Yeah, that's exactly kind of where they're going with this, actually. Like, they want this to happen. They want this so that you can bring up a photo of that ice cream, and it will tell you how many calories it is. It will tell you, like, its nutritional value. So that's kind of where Facebook wants to go with the augmented reality part of it.
Jason just searched his Google Photos for ice cream, and there's just, like, a dozen pictures of his children
lots of ice cream pictures.
Which is just,
I love hearing those keywords with Google Photos and being like, I wonder what I've got that falls in the ice cream category.
Open sourcing this is kind of the same as Google open sourcing DeepMind, right? And then that's how we are getting these new applications, sort of like Prisma and that sort of thing?
Yeah, and I think it's AI, especially out of all the different technologies involved, AI is one field that is open source the most. I feel like Facebook has open sourced like their language processing, their natural language processing, as well as the hardware they use to even make the AI possible. They've open sourced that. So it's one of those sort of rare beasts in the Silicon Valley world where, like, okay, share it around. It doesn't matter, because the more the merrier, the easier it is to advance this technology forward, the more people will be sharing it and creating with it and experimenting with it.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation, but you're absolutely right. And such a hot button thing right now. So we're talking about photos, obviously. What about extending this sort of work into full motion video? Are we a ways away from that type of analysis?
It is a lot harder because the objects are moving. Yeah. Moving images are really much, there's a high level of complexity involved.
Sure.
But they've already done it. Like, Facebook has told me that they've already identified which videos are cat videos and which videos are videos of food. So they know cats and they know food so far.
No, I mean, really, they got the essentials.
Yeah.
in internet culture.
They know cats and they know food. From there on, you know, we'll see where they go from here, but they've sort of identified those kinds of videos. So,
yeah.
And I think, importantly for Facebook, as they move forward with live, especially with live, they want to be able to say, okay, this video has explicit content. Maybe we shouldn't put that up so high in the list. Maybe we should not, you know, sort of block that out or something like that. So there are a lot of cases like this where I think as live becomes more and more popular, and as content becomes a lot harder to control, like shootings and, you know, all of those things that are happening on live, I think it's a lot more important for them to figure out how to classify that content and make sure they're not exposing people to the wrong things.
For sure. That's a big, big challenge when you're talking about live video. And they've already kind of encountered that struggle in its short time. I'm sure we'll see many more examples of that. Nicole Lee, it's always a pleasure getting to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming on today to chat with us. Tell people where they can follow all your work online.
You can go to Engadget.com.
And at Nicole. You're one of those people that got the first name on Twitter somehow. So excellent. And Nicole, very easy to find. Thank you, Nicole Lee.
Thanks.
Have a good night.
Well, Christopher Jensen wrote in with a pick for us. He writes, on your show, you recently mentioned a new router with an extender capability of 4,000 square feet, and it costs $400. I badly needed a new router and was told about a new router called Amplify from a company normally known for high-grade enterprise networking. I just got their $200 unit a week ago. It has two extenders. It's rated for 10,000 square feet of coverage. I was surprised that it set up faster than my terrible $15 router, and the app tells me more than I've ever known about my network. So I am going to try Amplify. That's me speaking. But we love to hear your picks. If you hear us talking about something and you have something better, we love to hear it. You can email us at tnt@twit.tv.
Very cool. Can't wait to hear what you think about it. It looks really nice, too. It's actually a very polished product. Up next, how scammers are using Instagram and what to look out for, basically. But first, let's take a minute to thank Blue Apron. They are the sponsor of this episode. I hope your stomach is ready to get hungry, because Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone, also supporting a more sustainable food system and setting the highest standards for ingredients, and making you just an amazing chef, a home chef that can deliver. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with fresh, high-quality ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. Every meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card, pre-portioned ingredients that can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. You can save time. You're going to save money. Did you know that shopping at the grocery store is 60% more expensive than what you're going to get with Blue Apron? If you spend a lot eating out or at high-end grocery chains, I mean, you could spend so much money doing that. Here, you're going to now spend under $10 per person for healthy, home-cooked meals that honestly can go toe-to-toe to anything that you buy in a restaurant. Customize your recipes every week based on your dietary preferences and choose a delivery option that fits your needs. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. Blue Apron delivers to 99% of the continental U.S. Blue Apron sets the highest quality standards for their community of over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the U.S. Seafood is sourced sustainably, beef is raised humanely, chickens are free range, pork is raised naturally, and regenerative farming practices are used for produce. By shipping the exact amount required for the recipe, Blue Apron is reducing food waste and simplifying the recipe for you. You don't have to cut it all up into portions. It's all done for you. Whether it's Japanese ramen noodles, wild-caught Alaskan salmon, or heirloom tomatoes, Blue Apron brings you the best. Blue Apron not only supports a more sustainable food system, it supports happy and healthy families. Cooking together builds strong family bonds, and research shows the Blue Apron families cook nearly 3 times more often. And new recipes are created every week by Blue Apron's culinary team, and they're not repeated within the year. So you've got spiced pork burgers with goat cheese and cucumber corn salad on one night. Another night, you've got summer vegetable and quinoa bowl with fairy tale eggplants, shishito peppers, and corn. And then the next night, this is the one that everybody gathers around the dinner table: chicken tinga tacos with summer squash and tomato salsa. Oh, that sounds so good. Check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. You're going to love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So do not wait. Visit blueapron.com/twit. And we thank Blue Apron for their support of Tech News Today.
The confidence scam has evolved from a back alley watch seller to phone calls from people claiming to fix your computer to emails from Nigerian princes. Now these get-rich-quick scams have found a new home among our photographs of sunsets and expensive meals on Instagram. Joining us to talk about this is Evan Blair, co-founder and the chief business officer at ZeroFox, a social media security company that's just published the white paper, Postgrams, Not Scams, Detecting Money-Flipping Scams on Instagram Using Machine Learning. Welcome, Evan.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So describe what some of these Instagram money flipping scams look like.
Sure. They kind of vary in the minute details, but the overall concept of a money flipping scam is an individual offering up the opportunity with a small investment to turn $50, $100, even $1,000, some of the larger scale ones, into 10 times that. And all you need to do is provide them access to your bank account, your online credentials. And it doesn't even have to be a bank account with money in it. It can be a negative balance bank account. And what they'll do with that bank account is then they'll deposit, in one scenario, they'll deposit a fraudulent check that they then withdraw the money prior to that check being identified as fraudulent by your financial institution, leaving you holding the bag for thousands and thousands of dollars. The idea is similar to those Nigerian Prince scams that you were just mentioning, in the sense that, hey, if I give you X, you'll give me X times a lot more.
So, you know, most of our audience is pretty tech savvy, and it looks like these Instagrams are just like pictures of money and sounds like scams that we've already heard of. Who are they targeting with these scams mostly?
Yeah, honestly, we found two kind of types of groups that were being targeted. We did some topic modeling, and it's detailed in the paper how the scientific way we went about that. The first group that I think is most interesting to talk about is military members and their families. We noticed them being disproportionately targeted out of all, and the topics ranging from, you know, things as subtle as hoorah, go Navy, beat Army, things along those lines, trying to grab the attention of folks that are following these hashtags, these topics, and looking at Instagram users that support their alma maters in some of the cases. But really the reasoning that we were able to dig into that they were targeting military members is because there's a built-in susceptibility to things that seem a little too good to be true. And that's not to say anything negative about the intelligence of our military or their family members. But think about when they walk into the recruiter's office for the first time. They're walking in and they're seeing offers from financial firms for the best deals in car insurance possible. $300, $500 signing bonuses for financial, for bank accounts. So you've got great deals out there for military members, and promotions are run 20% off, 50% off if you can show your military ID. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that $50 could turn into $500 in some of these scenarios. The other group that was highly targeted were those that were less fortunate financially. So sometimes it was students down on their luck. Sometimes it was poor holiday shoppers looking for a little extra cash to buy their loved ones gifts. So they really prey on weakness, and they really prey on kind of leveraging the human psychology to find their victims.
And it seems, from what I was reading through through the research, it seems like, and you've mentioned it a little bit here, that the hashtag aspect of this is a big wave that for visibility of these things. Mm-hmm. in a hashtag obsessed world on the internet, which it feels like it is right now, how do you pick apart the good versus the bad in this case?
Yeah, so that's the challenge, right? And social media presents a very unique challenge from a data set perspective. We're dealing with massive data, not even big data, and trying to sift through hundreds of millions and billions of posts and engagement on social is a challenge. And it really can only be accomplished with some of the advances that we've seen in machine learning technologies over even just the last few years. We've seen not necessarily computing power change, but we've seen the algorithms and the availability of high-powered and complex algorithms to researchers and to organizations around the world. So leveraging machine learning at scale is really the only way to kind of amass any sort of signal from the noise on machine learning. And to kind of answer the question of how do you go about finding the data points to look at, we do work with a lot of financial institutions who are facing these problems. Now, this is known to the financial services firms that are out there and that are kind of dealing with this issue on an ongoing basis. They were actively going at this manually, trying to mitigate and spending hundreds of thousands of dollars in real costs, and then dealing with millions of dollars in remediation costs, because most of the banks that we work with, and most banks that any of us would be banking with, provide, you know, fraud guarantees and have to replenish the funds that are taken from the individual.
So what is Instagram, if anything, doing about this?
Yeah, so Facebook and Instagram and most of the social networks out here have security teams, have a security focus, no question about it. And we try to work as closely with them as absolutely possible. In fact, we've submitted numerous amounts of scammer profiles and scam content to Instagram for takedowns and for removals from their networks. At the end of the day, the onus really is on security companies and the organizations that are being affected by these attacks, whose customers are being affected. Because in the grand scheme of Instagram posts, we're talking about a small fraction. But in the world of a financial institution that's being targeted, we're talking about something that's material here and something that actually impacts not just the customers who fall victim to the scams, but that impacts their reputation. Within their customer base who engages on social media. And that's pretty much everybody these days.
You also have an interesting part in the report about individual users who are trying to warn people about the scammers. You call them knights. Can you talk a little bit about those people?
Yeah, there's this really interesting concept of knights and knaves. So a knight on Instagram is somebody who goes out and says, I've identified a scammer. I've identified somebody as a malicious actor, and I want to alert the public. They're good people, and they post pictures of the scammers with scam across their picture, and tell people that these are bad guys. Be careful. But that knight is also being taken advantage of by the scammers. The concept of that knight, and those are what we call knaves. So a knave would be an individual that tries to pretend they're a knight, saying, hey, this guy is not legit. This is a scam all day long. But if you want real money, if you want to really flip, I'm the person to talk to for a flip. You know, DM me here, but don't go with this guy because he's a scammer. So they try to build credibility with the targets by pretending to be the good guys, but they're not the good guys.
So you can read this whole report at ZeroFox.com. Tell us a little bit about what ZeroFox does.
Sure. So ZeroFox is a social media security company. We help organizations continuously monitor and aggregate the data that's out there on social and then analyze that at line speed with a variety of machine learning classifiers and capabilities to identify business risks and security threats. You know, there's really two sides to the social media coin. One is it's a business platform. Undeniably, it helps organizations generate millions of dollars in additional revenue and retain customers like no other system that they have in place. So that side of the house can be targeted and impacting the business and the bottom line and even future revenue generation activities through fraud and scams and other attacks. On the flip side, social media is a communications channel, one that's used by every single employee at every single organization in the United States and around the world. And that communication channel, like others in the past, i.e. email, is being taken advantage of and being leveraged as a means into the organization. So we've got two issues here, one external facing and one using social media to get in, social engineering, phishing attacks, and the like. So what we try to do is give security teams the visibility they need, as well as the capability to take action against these malicious actors who are trying to go after their business, whether it's the kind of the business attack or the security attack. We try to unify both of those into a single SaaS-based platform that allows organizations to hopefully put an end to some of the risks that are impacting their customers as well as their employees and their business.
Well, Evan Blair, thank you so much for joining us. He is at ZeroFox. You can find out more information at ZeroFox.com. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Evan. Have a good night.
You too.
All right, TNT's fan of the day is Ken Dom on Google Plus, who sent us this image of his living room big screen right at the magical moment of high five. You can also see a screen down below, although it's covered in a lower third right now, of the awesome chat room all loaded up. And that is the perk of watching live. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook and use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT. And we're going to find it. Yeah, there you saw it there at the end. The chat room.
After the break, scientists are testing an amphibious robotic killing machine. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, the sponsor of this episode. Mortgages are the least exciting part about buying a house. It's exhausting, frankly. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. It's fast, it's powerful, and completely online. Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. Hate searching through stacks of old files and paperwork? With Rocket Mortgage, you can easily share your bank statements and pay stubs at the touch of a button, helping you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your unique financial situation. Even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all of this on your phone or your tablet. It's a quick online process that you can manage from the convenience of your couch. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, and MLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. PBS NewsHour says the answer to the invasive species problem might be a robotic killing machine. In case you're not an ichthyologist, here's the problem with lionfish. They're very pretty. They eat way too much. They sport venomous barbs. And they have no predators in some locations where they're very prevalent. Also, they're native to the Indo-Pacific, but apparently pet owners have been flushing them into the Atlantic, where they've thrived and headed up the coast, where they've become a huge nuisance, threatening ecosystems up and down the Atlantic. Now enter the lionfish terminator. That's not its official name. The idea came from the CEO of iRobot, who makes the Roomba, and it was created by RISE, which stands for Robots in Service of the Environment. Now, one model of the robot fish killer will carry a spear gun, and another is equipped with a robot arm with two metal electrodes that will electrocute the very, very pretty but horrible fish.
So, Megan, you're a pescatarian. Yes. What do you think about this?
I don't eat lionfish. Okay. I am a pescatarian that doesn't eat lionfish. Yeah. Well, they're an invasive species. They're destroying because, you know, they don't have any predators. And so, you know, I guess it's okay.
They are scary looking.
The lionfish? Yeah. I think they're pretty. I don't want to encounter one. Some people have been, they've had some success in the shallow water with just regular people doing the fish killing. But most of them live 200 feet beneath the surface. So that's why the robots, the robot killing machines, they're just being tested right now. They'll have cameras, they'll be controlled by a person. But the idea is that they will be autonomous in the future.
And they'll just roam around.
Killing. Autonomous killing machines. Not scary at all, really.
No.
So the reason why they would work, especially because these lionfish don't have predators, so they wouldn't be scared of anything because nothing ever kills it.
Except once they learn that the scary robot with a spear on its nose is something that they need to swim away from and fast. What are you going to do, huh? You can't beat a robot.
No.
Just saying.
You can't beat a robot. But these could get out of control.
Yeah.
Fast.
So could the robot someday. And now they're going to have an army in the water. So maybe we should worry about what that means 50 years from now.
Yeah, I know. Robots versus lionfish. Who would win?
That's a video game coming soon. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can hit us up on Twitter. We're at TechNewsTodayTV.
Come see us. Come on out here if you can. If you're in California, if you're in Northern California, if you're in San Francisco, we are a stone's throw from San Francisco. And I'm not talking about stone's throw, like how far we are from Proxima B. We're not light years from San Francisco. It's a simple 30.
Happy you clarified because I was like, that's really far away.
It's 30 to 45 minute drive, depending on traffic. Tickets at twit.tv to come watch us. We have a chair set up for you. And also find all the ways to subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And I'm on Twitter at Megan Maroney.
And I'm on Twitter too, at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Kara. Thanks to Victor for the words on the screen. Thanks to Kevin for editing and making us look good. Did I miss anyone?
Nope.
All right.
Just thank yourself. You did a great job today.
Jason, you did good. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see you all tomorrow. Bye, everyone. Yeah.